energy is not, but she is. And then there's another, some more quotes. Ata eva Shri Vishnu Purana eva. Thus it is said in the Shri Vishnu Purana. Kala kashta nimeshadi kala sutrasya gochare yasya shaktir nashuddhasya vasida tu same harihi prochyate parameshyo hi yakshudho piyaput upacharataha prasidato sano vishnur atma yak sarvadehinam iti. The Vishnu Purana says, may Lord Hari, the all pure, be satisfied with me. His counterpart energy is not under the purview of the flow of time, with its minutes, seconds, blinks of the eyes, and smaller fractions. Although that Lord Hari is all pure, one without a second, he is figuratively called the Lord of the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. May that Vishnu, the soul of all embodied beings, be satisfied with us. Okay, what does that mean? Because he's pure, he's not supposed to be connected with anything, but he's connected with the Goddess of Fortune only figuratively? Let's see what the Sridhar Swami says about that. Atra Swami Bir Eva Vyakyatam Cha. This has been explained by Srila Sridhar Swami. Usually Jiva Goswami doesn't refer to Sridhar Swami, he just quotes, and you have to know that he's quoting from Sridhar Swami. But in this case, he's not quoting from Sridhar Swami's Bhagavatam commentary. He's quoting from Sridhar Swami's Vishnu Purana commentary. So he mentions that this is Sridhar Swami, not somebody else. Sridhar Swami says, Kala Kashta Nimeshadi Kala, which is in the verse, Eva Sutravat Sutram Jagat Cheshta Niyamakatwat Tasya Gochare Vishaye Yasya Shaktir Lakshmir Navartate Swarup Abhinatwat Nityaiva Sa Kala Dina Nabhavat Ityartaha. Sridhar Swami says, time with its kalas, kashtas, nimeshas, and so on, is called sutra. Why is kala called sutra? Because it is just like a thread, regulating the activities of the whole universe. His energy, Lakshmi, is not present within its purview, its scope of operation. In other words, time doesn't affect Lakshmi. In other words, because she is non-different from his very self, she is not under the control of time, but is eternal. Ata eva tasya sarupa beda shudas yet uktam. And thus, since she is non-different from his essence, he is here called the pure. Okay, he's pure. Because, okay, he's got this consort, but she's not some other lady. She's part of him. She's part of his own self. He's not affected the way other men are affected by having a wife. His wife is not different from himself. So he doesn't undergo any change by having his consort. Nanu. Okay, but a question arises. Nanu. Yadi Lakshmis Tatsurupa Bina Katam Tarhi Lakshmiya Patir Uchyate. Here's the question. But if Lakshmi is non-different from his very self, how is he called the husband of Lakshmi? Can't be your own husband. If she is him, then he would be his own husband. That's ridiculous. This is answered. Tatraha prochyate iti. This is answered by the words beginning prochyate. It is said, Para cha sao ma cha lakshmis tasya ishak parama esha. Para ma isha. Yakshudha kevalopi apacharate beta vivakshaya prochyate. She is supreme, she's para, and she's also the goddess of fortune, ma, and thus her lord or Isha is Paramesha. Parama, ma, Isha. Even though he is pure, meaning alone, he's called her husband, figuratively, with the intention of indicating their difference. Dvitiyo yat shabda prasidhau iti. There's two words, yat or yaha, is used twice in this second verse. Isn't that ambiguous? Or redundant, I'm sorry. Redundant, it's unnecessarily use of the same pronoun twice, which was considered a fault. But there's a reason for it. The second word, yat, let me just make it ya, yaha. In the translation, saying yat is confusing, because in the verse it's actually yaha. The second word, ya, in this verse, it expresses that this fact is well known. Pisidhau. It's just for emphasis. It's like somebody says, you know, in the class. It's supposed to be for emphasis, the repetition. To emphasize the fact that he's the one who's the husband of the goddess of fortune. Okay, let me. Yes? Why more? You have two yats in the original? Yeah, but yat is the undeclined form. But it's in the form yaha in the verse. So I don't want to say yat in the translation. The readers may not recognize that's the word, the same word. So I put it back in the nominative form. In the translation, I say yaha. Because it appears as yaha in the verse.
Yes?
The thing is, we as a BBT standard, we when we put Sanskrit words into our English sentences, we usually use the subject case anyway, and the Sanskrit text is using the undeclined form. It's not neuter; it's just undeclined yet. So I don't think we're breaking any rules by changing it to yaha in the translation. At least that's what we do. We take a word that may be in some case, and we just, to make it, you know, in the purport or in the translation, we just use the denominative form. I could leave the ending off and just say ya. How's that? Ya is the base word. So the second word, ya, the word ya appears twice in the verse. So the second word, ya, in the verse, without a visarga, just ya. That looks funny, doesn't it? Okay, I'll make it yaha. Anyway, let's read the commentary. Then we'll have discussion. Actually, we were supposed to finish. There were some questions yesterday about yesterday's paragraph that we didn't carry through. So we'll have to go back to that first. But let me read the commentary.
Time.
The Supreme Lord's representative for ruling this world is adequate in itself for ensuring that fallible souls suffer the degradations of birth, death, and always inconstant life between birth and death. Even a life of seemingly perfect success and harmony must be marred by the pains of birth, disease, old age, and death, which are the inevitable effects of time. To be infallible means to avoid the influence of time. Lord Vishnu's personal Shakti is eternally untouched by time, and he is therefore pleased to be her husband, foregoing the option of remaining a bachelor. but himself, by himself, he has everything he might need and want. But he accepts a consort just to increase his happiness. Okay. First, are there any questions about this paragraph first? Yes.
Why is it said para-ma? Because you know that ma is already modus of fortune. What is the use to add this para-ma for describing Lakshmi Devi?
Why add the para to the ma?
Yeah. Why para-ma?
Well, because
why not just ma?
Well, the thing is, we're trying to explain the word paramesha. The word is not just mesha, it's paramesha. There is no word mesha. So we can't just put ma and isha together because it doesn't make a word. We have to explain how parama means the supreme ma.
You're thinking that maybe it's some other meaning is there, like...
Well, yes, another meaning is that he is the supreme isha, the parama. Parama also just means supreme by itself. Para means supreme and parama. Parama means supreme. So the Parama Isha usually means simply the Supreme Lord. But here we want to bring Lakshmi into it. So he's the Lord of the Supreme Ma.
Maybe we have Ma usually is addressed to Durga Devi, and then we have Parama, which is original of Durga Devi, means Lakshmi Devi. So maybe in this sense we say Parama.
Yeah. Well,
my itself is it
okay, let's see. Yes, okay. The supreme ma is Lakshmi. We can say that Durga is also ma. Your mother is also called ma. Yeah, means mother. So she's the supreme mother.
Maybe because in the sense that Durga Devi, she can also provide some material facilities for her worshippers.
Yes, so and by convention. She's the one who's usually called Ma, Durga. So Lakshmi's distinguished as Para Ma.
Yes. Who is this? The word breaking of the word is Para plus
para,
Ma.
Para Ma, Isha. And Para is feminine form, but. You can leave off the feminine when you make the compound.
Oh, so...
When it's up, it can be deleted in a samasa?
There is one sutra in Samasa Prakarana that feminine adjective becomes like a masculine when it's combined. But okay. I don't think it's the case.
It should. It should drop the feminine ending.
But even if it's not like, even if you have para-ma, so we just by Sankhya of Paramesha get the same form.
Right. But if you as a separate word, para has to have a feminine ending because it's agreeing with ma. It has to be para.
Yeah, para.
In a sentence.
By itself. Para. So this is sutra but the sutra, when we have adjective which refers to the feminine noun, this adjective becomes like a masculine, purushottamavat. So it's possible. So para.
Purushottamavat in all forms or just in the oblique forms?
Vacharinga lakshmim dulyatikarna lakshmiam natun nachapriyadishim. This is sutra from Samasa Prakarana. It means that vacharinga lakshmim, this adjective, when feminine noun follows, and they have some atikarana, means they refer to the same things.
Oh.
So in this way, para is feminine, but it becomes like a masculine purushottamavat.
Yes.
So we have short a.
Okay. You have another question about that?
So in this translation, in this Anicheta, it seems like the main point of discussion is how Lakshmi and Narayan, they are both same. At the same time, they are different.
Really?
I mean, like, the question is asked, if they are one, how it is been told that Narayan is husband of Lakshmi? That's the question raised.
I think the main point of the discussion of the Anucheta is simply that the Swarup Shakti, that we've been analyzing different aspects of the Swarup Shakti, that she's also the personality Lakshmi. She's in person, not just another energy, impersonal energy. She's a person, and as Lord Hari displays his personality, she displays her, corresponding. So I think the focus is Lakshmi as a person.
The question is raised that, but if Lakshmi is not different from his very self, that there is a, oneness.
It's not a question. You know, it's a sort of silly question, but it's coming from some non-Vaishnava or somebody is asking this question. Yeah. We understand that, you know, the Supreme Lord and his pleasure potency are different and non-different.
Yeah.
That doesn't create a problem for us. But for someone else who can't swallow that Achintya Beta Beta, he says, well, look, you say she's non-different, that means that she is him. And then he would be his own husband.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking it too literally. But that's not the Vaishnava thing, it's somebody else thinking like that.
Okay. But I have this note, in the commentary, this particular point is not, mention anything about this, like for this particular this translation of this text.
But what I just said, you mean?
Yeah, on this particular point, the Sridhar Swami raised a question and he answered also. Is that need more explanation in the commentary?
Okay, I'll make a note. The Purva Paksha and its answer need clarification here. Okay, I wrote that we should add explanation in the purport. Yes?
Yeah, like in this verse, Radha Krishna Pranaya Vigrisir Vladini Shakti Asmat Agatmakam Abhipuvi Purudeva Gatam Paramtam. So, it's like Krishna, he was alone and then he divided himself into two, Radha and Krishna, for the sake of the pastimes. So, is it in the same way that Lord Narayana, he's alone and then he divides himself.
Well, when was Krishna all by himself? When did this happen? When did he separate himself?
Yeah, we know that it wasn't any particular moment in time because
it never really was. He never really was separate, right? I mean, it's not like God was lonely and he finally decided to have a consort. He always had a consort. Same thing with Narayan. It's not like Narayan was a bachelor for so many years, he finally got bored with it.
But when, for example, they said in the Upanishads, I call Narayana a seat and then he decided to create and then he manifested this and that.
That's just the recreation of the universe when Narayan wakes up. It's not the beginning of everything. It's just the recreating of the material world. Is what's being described in Narayan looked around, didn't see anything, and said, let me create. But that's not when he never really was all by himself. Just from our point of view, he's all by himself in between creations. Even then, he's not really all by himself. We just don't see the spiritual side. We're seeing an empty cosmos during the annihilation. We don't see Narayan having a good time in the spiritual world with his friends. Even during the annihilation. We don't see that side. So it doesn't mean Narayan was all by himself, bored and lonely. This is just Narayan deciding, okay, it's time to create a universe, let me do it. Not, you know, he's doing it for our benefit. It's not that he was bored. And not that he was really all by himself.
But for example, when they say that, like, Lord Balarama, he manifests spiritual world, he manifests different planes, he is the source of all incarnations, Lord Balarama. So it looks like that there is some point of time when he manifested spiritual world and when he manifested divine entities and so on.
Point of time when Balarama created the spiritual world?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's an eternal emanation. This is the Shakti Parinam, the mystery of eternal emanations. Yes, all creation is coming from Balaram, but it's coming eternally. It's not that there was a point in time, spiritual or material time, in which there was nothing, and then Balaram had to be called on to make something. There was always, Vaikuntha is always there. Material world gets created and destroyed repeatedly, but Vaikuntha is eternal. It always was there. It was always emanating from Lord Balaram.
So we should say instead that he's been manifesting the spiritual world. We should say instead that he's been manifesting the spiritual world like past continuous, that he's doing it since the time immemorial. That we should say that not in the past tense, but in the present perfect, that he's been manifesting, he's doing it, and we have no beginning of this activity.
Right? Properly speaking, yes, we shouldn't be using a past tense that Krishna was all by himself and then he separated. That, just say that storytelling. Sometimes a story happened in the past, but you say it in the present. You mix up tenses just for the sake of telling a story. It's just rhetoric. It's just, even though you know that it's in the past, not the present, but still you tell the story in the present, historical present. It's just a style. So this is also just a poetic style, to say that Krishna was by himself and then he separated. It's just to tell a story that we can understand. It shouldn't be taken literally that Krishna, there was any time when Krishna was by himself.
Previous anucheta, should we discuss?
Okay, now we're going to discuss the big questions about the previous anucheta, which is, the whole problem here is about what?
The previous text of three. Yeah.
And what was the big problem we had?
We are discussing about that you said infallible can be all the jivas in the spiritual world. Technically, they can be called as infallible.
Okay.
But because...
Right. And you know, there's also the question, are all the associate, eternal associates of the Lord, are they jivas or not?
Yeah.
There's another, I think that question we're not ready for. We're still there, you know, I think we still have to research. But, okay, about the fallibility of jivas, are the living entities in the spiritual world, the liberated eternal associates, are we going to call them fallible or infallible? And I saw two different opinions. The one was the Purana we were quoting? One of the Puranas was...
Skanda Purana.
Yeah. Was presenting it that, was saying that the fallible, infallible, is only the Shakti Tattva. The spiritual Sarup Shakti and the material Maya, Prakriti, they're infallible. And that is all that's included on the list of infallible, according to the Skanda Purana version. But Baladev Vidyabhushan's version of interpreting Krishna's statement, 15, 15, is that some jivas are infallible. The liberated jivas are infallible. And my point take on it is just, it's just two different ways of defining what you mean by infallible. It doesn't change the facts, it's just using the word differently. Okay, so, but you wanted to discuss it further. So go ahead.
No, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are muktas and bhaddas, and those who are after performing sadhana, those who attain liberation.
There's muktas, bhaddas, and those who do sadhana and become perfect.
Yeah.
Those are three different categories?
Those are eternally liberated, and those who are bound. The phrase is eternally bound, but basically bound for a long time. And those who perfect their sadhana and reach the spiritual world.
Okay, so he distinguishes between those who are always liberated and those who become liberated.
Yeah.
And then you got those who are just not liberated.
Yeah.
So they got three different kinds of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if that is a case, when we say, one particular party says that the jivas from the spiritual world cannot fall, but the very fact that we have fallen from there, it shows we are infallible. we are fallible.
We're fallible if we fell from the spiritual world. There's arguments over that.
Yeah. I mean, considering that from the spiritual world as such.
Assuming that we were in the spiritual world?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we are proof that somebody can fall from the spiritual world if we were in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Okay, but then so if we are fallible, the ones who fell, why not the other ones who haven't fallen but maybe could?
Yeah, then how can we categorize everybody is fallible technically?
Well, okay. Now, the only way I can explain it is that the potential is there. Only a foolish person or a faithless person would exercise the option to fall down. Faithful and fortunate souls just don't do it. They don't fall down. But they could. I have the potential to get up from here and immediately walk out in the street and get run over by a truck. I can do it anytime I want. But I've never done it. I've done things almost as stupid, but not. I haven't done that, and I don't think I'm going to do it in the future. I would sign a contract. I will say, if I get run over by a truck, I'll pay you $1 million. And if I don't get run over by a truck, you pay me $1 million. I'll sign that. Because I'm pretty sure I'm not going to walk out in front of a truck intentionally. Although I could. So I'll risk my fortune I shouldn't gamble, but I'll risk my fortune swearing that I'm not going to get myself run over by a truck, not intentionally. So like that, you could say infallible means, I mean, living entities are technically fallible because they have the potential to do it, but many living entities in Vaikuntha are never going to do it, are never going to fall down. But if we call all the living entities fallible, we're making the point that any of them theoretically could. They could fall down. Any living entity could fall down. And that, a lot of devotees don't want to admit that, don't want to agree with that. And I can see why. Then you're saying that even the closest associates of the Lord among the jivas could fall down. Then either the real close associates must not be jivas. They must be shakti tattva, because jivas could fall down. You may adjust it by just not letting jivas get near enough to the Lord to be really close associates. Or else you just accept that they could fall down, but they're not going to, except for a few exceptional cases. That probably doesn't satisfy anybody, but that's all the thought I can come up with on that question. Yeah.
Is it like the basic point of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, or this particular point is not clear in any, not only Prabhupada's writings, but also in other Goswami's writings that from...
Well, like if you phrase the question, did we fall from Vaikuntha or not?
Yeah.
Where did we come from and when did we come?
Yeah.
If you phrase it like that, because it's a related question. Hmm. You know, it's related to the question, are we fallible or not? So you can say that, you can say something equivalent to that by asking, where did we come from? Where did we come from when we fell down? And when did we do it? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses that question. I think in the... I guess in Jivadharma. Sorry, I don't have the exact reference, but he says that, yeah, you know where? Okay, but what I'm talking about is where he says that it's actually not good for us to speculate on that question. It's beyond our knowledge, and we're just going to get confused and maybe, come to a serious misunderstanding. If we speculate about such a question, where did we come from and when? Something we are not capable of knowing in our present condition. So he just says, don't worry, don't even speculate on it. Yes.
He says about it in Bhakti Loka in the section related to Nishchaya. Nishchaya, he explains Dashamala Tattva, and then in the middle he says that there are three categories which are called Achintya. He quotes this verse, Achintya Kalu Ye Bhava Natam Starkina Yajayat. This is this one. That this is a category which is beyond our mind's capacity to understand the logic. So, and then he says that if we are being on the material like platform, using our material mind, we'll try to understand three topics particularly. He says, fall down of Jiva, then Guru Tattva, and then Shiva Tattva. He says that it will bring us only to frustration and doubts, and in this way
frustration and doubt, then we're in trouble.
And we won't be able to understand it either, and so we might even fall down from the...
Yeah, we'll fall down because we'll lose our enthusiasm from that frustration and doubt. So he recommends that and two other things, don't even speculate about them.
And therefore he says one very interesting point, that he says that only knowledge which is received from Guru Parampara, like Amnaya or knowledge, can dissipate our doubts. So we have to just take this conclusion, okay, we are fallible, we are Kshara, or we are not fallible, whatever is there, from our spiritual master, from Guru Parampara. And only in this way we have to theoretically accept this point.
Yes.
And then when we come to the spiritual level, level of Achintya, in this way we'll be able to understand ourselves properly in details.
Yes. Yes.
Then all the jivas from spiritual world have that potential to fall down. So those, even after coming here, they went back, they got liberated. So those also have that potential to come back again.
Right, but they also remember what happened to them. They remember how they went through falling down once before. So that makes it less likely that they're going to do it again. Like you train a foolish child or an animal by beating him, he just doesn't want to do the same thing again. It's going to get him beaten. Just natural.
I remember one analogy in this regard was about drug men, one who takes drugs. So he might remember that it was very, very bad after this medicine. Stopped working. It was like a very, very, very bad experience. But at the same time, he might remember this pleasure which he experienced while taking this drug.
Right.
So some pleasure, some very, very small pleasure is there to be, to try to be in the position of Krishna and to try to enjoy this world. So like even theoretically, it's possible that he might come again.
Well, if he's still addicted, it's not just the thought, but it's the urge, you know, deep in his guts, that, you know, the urge of the addiction that I need to fix. I need to go back to my addiction. So the only cure is to become addicted to Krishna. If we it's not just by mental exercise that we're going to cure ourselves of our material addictions. Not just even by so-called self-realization. We have to become even more addicted to Krishna. That we wouldn't want to jeopardize or ruin our relationship with Krishna by doing something stupid. Even if our guts tell us to do it, even if we have an urge, we're not going to give in to the urge because we have a stronger urge to keep Krishna happy. So only prema, only real Krishna consciousness will undo all these addictions.
But still, like in this example, although we might have, although this drug man, he might be son of a very, very wealthy father, and he might have a very good relation with his father, but still he might come again to his previous.
He might
again start taking drugs.
He might.
Yeah.
But
so some opportunities there.
If he does, then he hasn't been cured. But it's possible to be cured of addiction. Mm-hmm. Love of Krishna can cure addiction. So you can put the intoxicant right in front of him, and he won't be tempted to touch it. Mm-hmm. If he's actually cured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I mean by bringing this analogy, that in the spiritual world also, although every living entity, he has everything, he has a relationship with Krishna, but still he might, like some very small trace of desire might come to be in the position of Krishna to enjoy in this material world. And although he might even have come from being in the material world, he might have experienced some very bad, he might have some better experience.
But still,
despite of this, he might even come again to this, right, this world.
But even a small attraction to, yeah, something inappropriate can make you fall.
Yeah.
So one view is that can't happen. That someone who's in the spiritual world can't fall down. And we're saying now that someone in the spiritual world can fall down. It's two different viewpoints. So in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we've got two different contending views. And devotees are arguing over which view Prabhupada describes to. Devotees are still arguing over it.
I think the only solution is that we have a freedom of choice. If we have a freedom of choice, we can choose either to be with Krishna or to go to the spiritual,
right,
world. And that's the key point.
Well, okay, but if you're standing on the viewpoint that nobody can fall from the spiritual world, then you don't have a choice. Those in the spiritual world don't have a choice to fall down. They can't even if they want to. Nobody falls from Vaikuntha means nobody can, even if they want to. And we did. Those of us who are down here fallen, we didn't come from Vaikuntha, we came from somewhere else. That serious Vaishnavas are presenting that idea.
But yes. Does it mean that they've never been to Vaikuntha?
Yeah, that would mean that.
But the question arises, what is the infidelity, or what is the kind of injustice that some living entity from the very beginning they are in the spiritual world, and some living entity they were put in some Brahma jyoti.
Yeah, what's the justice in that? And what's the justice that I'm down here running in the material world? You know, I was like, it looks like it's not my fault I'm here. Why am I apologizing to Krishna? Krishna should be apologizing to me. If that's the situation. If I'm here, not because of my own choice, but I, you know, involuntarily I'm here, then it's not my fault. That makes that sort of undoes our whole sadhana, our whole attitude. That's why I can't agree with it, because the conclusion is not my fault I'm here.
It makes Krishna some very, very cruel master.
Unless okay, we were all lined up in the Brahma Jyoti. We never went by Kunta, we were in the Brahma Jyoti. And everybody had the choice. Where do you want to go? You want to go to the spiritual world or the material world? Some of them chose the spiritual world and we chose the material world. Then you can say it's your fault. You know, in the Brahma Jyoti, you had your choice and you misused it. You could argue like that.
It looks like some Christian theory of original sin, like that Adam and Eve, they were in the heaven and then they decided to go to from there. Like,
is that what the Christians said, that you were in heaven before?
Looks like that, like...
Oh, Garden of Eden, okay.
Like,
but, you know, Adam didn't really choose to rebel. He got tricked into it by his wife and the snake. It wasn't really his choice. It wasn't his intentional choice to get into trouble. Yeah, he chose not to listen to God, yeah. I'm sorry, I can't.
But is that fact, Adam and Eve eating fruit and all those things?
Oh, I don't know.
It's just a...
Not necessarily fact. It's not necessarily true.
Yeah, it's not a fact. And through this, Krishna has got inconceivable things. Can both the things be true, that both the devotees' views, that some...
Well, I don't think so. Unless you can explain that they both mean exactly the same thing. They look like they're contradictory views.
Yeah, but
we were in Vaikuntha or we weren't.
But at the same time, Krishna...
I don't think we can be both in Vaikuntha and not in Vaikuntha.
So,
one of them's got to be right and the other one's got to be wrong. But
Krishna can reconcile all seemingly contradictory things by what he can see.
Okay, I don't know how he'll do that, but okay.
Because whenever
maybe there's some way that it could be both true we were in Vaikuntha and we weren't. I can't imagine how though.
Yes. Roji, if we say that about Vaikuntha, Brahma Jyoti, whatever, then the origin of the living entities, the kind of Vailakshanya or Parapaksha will come to the Supreme Lord. Vailakshanya or partiality will be on the...
Vailakshanya is the wrong word.
Or Parapaksha.
Yeah. He's being biased. Vailakshanya means the difference.
Vaishamya.
Vaishamya is the right word, yeah.
Okay. So if that will be imposed on the Supreme Lord, if it is...
Right, and Vedanta Sutra argues that the Lord isn't unfair. Yeah. Explains this, how he's fair. But how do you explain he's fair if he made us fallen? We didn't have a choice in the matter. What's fair about that?
No, if you take that case that we were somewhere else and we chose to come down, not to go back to the spiritual world.
Well, okay, if we chose to come down from the Brahmacharya, then that's a way out to explain it. Now, the Madhvites, their argument is that, no, God created us like this, and that's God, he's mysterious, and you shouldn't judge God. He's perfect no matter what he does, so don't criticize him. That's their explanation.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, he did make us, the fallen souls, fallen. He created some living entities as tamasic. They have no hope of liberation. They're created like that. And that's God's all perfect glory that he can do that also, and don't question it.
Mm-hmm.
That's their explanation. That sounds very Christian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but,
anyway, that's what the modern Madhvites say. Whether Madhvacharya actually said that himself originally, I'm a little confused about that.
Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, for ISKCON devotees, like Prabhupada, so many times emphasized, seems like at least for me, that we are in the spiritual world, but we become enemies of Krishna, and that's why we came down. It seems like again and again Prabhupada have said.
That's the way Prabhupada was talking, yes.
Huh?
That was the way Prabhupada was talking.
Yeah, so
and
then
we,
why...
We simply took it like that. We never even thought while Prabhupada was present. We never even thought that there was a controversy.
Yeah.
Prabhupada said we were with Krishna. We just said, okay, we're with Krishna. And that was our simple understanding.
So then why there is a bit two opinions in Gaudiya's? How can we officially say that there are two viewpoints in Gaudiya's?
Well, there are two... because... as far as I understand, this is the viewpoint of Prabhupada going back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Mm-hmm.
But other Gaudiya Vaishnavas take it the other way.
Other means who are?
This means outside of the line of studying with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I don't know how going back that far, but at least going back to Bhaktivinoda, what I see is that we have the viewpoint that we were with Krishna in Vaikuntha.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at least some other Gaudiya Vaishnavas who are coming from other parts of our sampradaya have the viewpoint, no, we weren't in the spiritual world before we came to the material world.
I mean, they are bona fide acharyas in that line?
Yes. I mean, yeah, we don't agree with them.
They've written
necessarily,
some...
But they're sincere followers of Lord Chaitanya, and they have this different viewpoint.
They've written some...
I'm not saying that they're right, but I don't think that we'd say they're bogus because we have some philosophical disagreement. I think there are a lot of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. There's many different Gaudiya Vaishnava groups, and I think a lot of them ascribe to this view. So we have to deal as far as who's right, who's bogus, and who's bona fide. We have to look at each one individually. Yes, I'm sorry. Well, you know, this viewpoint certainly manifested in the Gaudiya Math, that some of the Gaudiya Math teachers have been teaching like this. I don't know how far back that goes. I don't know what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was teaching on this. Maybe it can be traced out. You know, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati himself took, what his view on this was, I'm not sure. I'm just not well versed enough in his teachings to say that. But it's a fact that some of his followers in later generations ascribe to this other view, that we weren't in Vaikuntha. So we do have this disagreement even with the representatives of the Gaudiya Math.
But nevertheless, within ISKCON, as Gaudiya Vaishnava...
And we have, when it's come into ISKCON now, after Prabhupada's disappearance, the controversy is in ISKCON itself, yes.
But within ISKCON, when we reading Prabhupada's books and these statements, is it not
Prabhupada,
clear?
Prabhupada makes statements in the Bhagavatam that nobody falls in Vaikuntha. Mm-hmm. And devotees, you know, see those statements and say, well, if that's true, then nobody falls in Vaikuntha. Nobody, you know, we couldn't have been there.
So it is.
And there's some other statements of Prabhupada too, right? No?
Then this article about Jivas fall down, it was official article released by GBC, so it was said that Shri Prabhupada, he repeatedly emphasized that we were in the spiritual world.
Yes.
And we fell down in the spiritual world. It was like official opinion of GBC on this issue.
Okay, it's the official position. But there's still devotees in ISKCON who aren't happy with that official position. I'm not one of them, but I have to admit I have god brothers who are not happy with it. Yes?
I have a question about this. Like, they have opinion that we've never been to Vaikuntha, but then they must have give some references from Shastras, like
that.
Outside of, like, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he...
No, about which side?
About that, about their side, means that...
Okay, but where is the statement in show me a statement in Bhagavatam or other Shastra that we were in Vaikuntha. Show me such a statement. There's a problem. We don't have obvious, simple statement that we were in Vaikuntha before.
So we have no statements.
There's one statement, not necessarily Jesus, but at the end of Radha Sahasranam, Narada Pancharatra,
yes,
it says that one who reads the Sashtakam and does whatever else goes to Vaikuntha for 10,000 years and then comes back. But I'm not arguing any side. I'm just, this quote I do not understand. It doesn't fit in anything that I've read.
Well,
I just want to bring forth your attention.
There are other statements in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana that talk about going to other parts of the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. That talk about going to Vaikuntha temporarily. This is another problem. This is something that's actually said in Shastra, that some people do something and then go to Vaikuntha, but only for some time. I'm not sure what to make of those statements. And where does this Radha Sahasranam come from? Maybe it's from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana.
It's from the
Narada Pancharatra.
It's the same version as
right. So some places in the Puranas and Pancharatras that talk about going to Vaikuntha for a certain temporary time. I'm not sure what to make of that. Yes?
I remember this opposite camp, they stated that Shri Yuga Goswami, he says in Sandarbhas something about that we've never been to Vaikuntha. But have you seen these statements in... I remember Satya Narayana Prabhu, he was speaking about this.
That Jiva Goswami says that what we've already read, under page 62, you know, Askalanam, that nobody falls down.
But it wasn't clear like it is.
No, it says you, if you read that under page and see it in a certain way.
Yeah.
But we read it, and at least the way I presented it, it didn't say that nobody ever fell from Vaikuntha. But it was my interpretation, you heard it from me. So someone could argue that that's not the right way to read what Jiva Goswami said.
And you have no commentaries on this passage.
We have what?
Do we have any commentaries on this passage to elaborate it more?
No, we don't have commentaries on the Bhagavad Sandarbha. We only have various editions that include Hindi or Bengali translations, Haridas Shastris and a few others. That's just their opinions. We don't have, you know, Baladeva Dibhushan on it, or we don't have.
How they are writing the translation for this text?
They study the Sandarbha, they studied from their teachers, you know, they read previous translations and wrote according to their realization. There's no commentary.
I'm asking how they are interpreting this particular
I'd have to look. I'm not sure. We can look in the editions we have on that Anuchi, see what the Hindi and Bengali translations say. What they very often do is not get into it. They just say the words over and don't give an explanation sometimes. If it's something tricky, they suddenly just glide over it.
Guruji, the other day you made an interesting statement in Krishna Balaram Temple Bhagavatam class.
Yes.
That Krishna has many expansion, the Shaktis are there, they always perform devotional service, and he also has his the spiritual world expansion. And in one of the expansion he said he also wanted to have a reciprocation with some souls who make a choice whether to serve him or
not.
Well,
those are the jivas.
Yeah, so that is that solves all the problem that Krishna created them and they have a choice.
Well, yes, jivas, see, Krishna wants the jivas to have a choice.
So they can be in the spiritual world, make
a choice. He wants the jivas to be fallible, because when they don't choose to fall, then they have a special kind of love with him that only jivas have with him. That they could have fallen, nobody stopped them, but they chose not to. That gives a special taste to Krishna. And he wants jivas to have jivas around like that.
Yeah, that makes our seems like,
yeah. Why we're fallible? Because choosing to love Krishna, even when you're fallible, is a special rasa that's only enjoyed with jivas. Yes?
In spiritual world, nothing wrong happens, in the sense there are protectors.
Yes.
Then why this wrong desire is allowed in our heart? That there is no envy in spiritual world, so why this envy is appeared in our heart there? And you know,
well, I mean, you know, my answer would be that Krishna gives us free will, that we can choose to start to envy him, you know, but then we get immediately kicked out because we show some envy. No envy in the spiritual world, so you're not in the spiritual world anymore. Take your envy and go someplace else. But we have the freedom to develop envy, or at least the beginning seed of it. And we're in the spiritual world. We're in the spiritual world, but we're not robots. We're given the autonomy. That's my explanation. The other explanation from the other side is it doesn't happen. That's a fiction. It doesn't happen. Nobody falls in the spiritual world. A person who's situated in the spiritual world can't do that. He can't envy Krishna, because everything in the spiritual world is perfect. That's the opposite way to, you know, viewpoint on it. That we didn't fall from this, we couldn't have fallen from the spiritual world, because the spiritual world is perfect, everybody in the spiritual world is perfect, and nobody can fall down. And there can't be any envy, so therefore nobody falls down from there. Then we must have come from somewhere else, or we always were here. Yeah. Okay, but maybe there is insecurity. I'm a jiva, I can fall down, I have to be careful. Even if I'm with Krishna, you know, I have to be careful because I could fall down. Maybe that anxiety is there in the spiritual world. Yes?
We can see in the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although he is a liberated soul, but he always prays for Krishna to protect him from material
yes.
desires.
Yes.
He takes very, very humble position, and because
yes.
of that, he's protected.
And generally, pure devotees do express the anxiety that I may fall down. Please protect me from falling down. And it's especially the liberated, the eternal associates who think like that and pray like that.
Like there are a few stories about even especially Narada Muni. How he became proud, and then immediately Krishna arranged that he fell down from his position, just to show him that you shouldn't be proud of his Okay. Of your capacity and so on. So it's like this community is the only protection for us. No?
Yes. Yes. Okay, we're 10 minutes over time. So is Matsya Prabhu here? Okay, so we better stop. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.